One Boy Scout troop leader in Georgia has admitted to the sexual abuse of several boys over a period of years, but he has never faced charges. Sunday's edition of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution tells the story of how a troop leader and church deacon evaded consequences for more than 30 years. Christian Boone is the AJC's public safety reporter, and he investigated the story. Good morning, Christian.
Good morning.
This abuse began in the 1960s, and yet the church knew of it. When did they find out?
They found out in 1981. Late in the year, they were alerted by a father of one of the victims who had told his father what had happened to him.
They chose not to report that to the police. Why?
It was agreed, and we don't know the full answer on this because, we couldn't get all the actors in that to speak, but we did speak to the father who reported the abuse. And, you know, the feeling was is that it was best handled in-house and that they could handle it. They could watch him. They could keep a close eye on him. And that if it was reported to authorities, there probably wouldn't be much interest in pursuing it.
And at some point, they started issuing a warning to people in the church that he was not to be left with kids.
14 years later.
14 years after the initial report.
Correct. Well, he was kept away from. He was forced to resign from the Boy Scouts, from Troop 26, not the Boy Scouts, but from Troop 26, which is affiliated with the or sponsored by the First Baptist Church in Gainesville.
When did it come to the police's attention?
The first time we know it came to police's attention, and it may have come to their attention earlier. We don't know that, but the first time we were aware of it was 1994, when one of the victims who was in Troop 26.
Now an adult,
59 years old. But at that time, he told, a sheriff's investigator that he suspected the abuse was still going on. They investigated that allegation, couldn't confirm it. But during that allegation is when they received a confession from Fleming Weaver, the former scoutmaster of Troop 26.
What did he confess to?
Molesting, quote, at least five or six. And then they named them and he...
At least five or six.
Right. He named six. So... We're going on that assumption of at least six. And this was up until 1981. He told them that he had been received counseling for roughly a year and that he was, quote, not cured of his, quote unquote, illness or knew how to handle it at this point and had it under control.
He is still a deacon at the church?
We don't know if he still is. He was as of 2 weeks ago when we informed the current pastor of the confession, which he said he did not know about. And he said at that point that he would no longer be in any kind of leadership role in the church.
How is it possible that someone who is a confessed child molester has faced zero charges?
Well, when the confession was made in 1995, actually, when he made that confession, the statute of limitations had passed. He could not.
What's the statute of limitations?
He could not be charged
on sexual abuse.
It happened over, I believe it's 10 years, but it had passed, and all the boys he had confessed molesting, all those happened prior to 1981, and this was in 1995. So police knew about it, but there was nothing they could do. Now, they didn't know about the victim that we're profiling Sunday.
And that's a harrowing story, which I would recommend people take a look when the piece comes out on Sunday. I'm speaking with Christian Boone. He's the AJC's public safety reporter, and we're talking about a Boy Scout troop leader in Georgia who has admitted to the sexual abuse of at least six boys over a period of decades, but has never faced charges. He hasn't faced charges, but there has been a change in the law. How did the law change?
The law changed and gave a two-year window that expires, I believe, next year, next July. That allows former victims to file a civil suit.
In civil courts for
civil
damages.
Court for damages, which is what has happened yesterday.
So the man now that you profile in your piece filed in civil court yesterday.
Yes, against Fleming Weaver, the scoutmaster, and several other parties.
So the several other parties include the church.
They include the church, they include the pastor at the time, and I believe they include the Boy Scouts.
What triggered this change in the law here in Georgia? Was it the larger scandal over the Boy Scouts?
I think it was the awareness that a lot of the victims, especially in the time when this happened, were afraid to come out. It was much more, much more victims were almost made to be, you know, to be blamed for it. So there was a lot of reticence by victims then, and none of these victims at the time had any interest in pursuing this criminally. And now a couple said they would testify, but that was sort of, you know, at the time. But, you know, these cases were hard to prosecute back then, and they were, you know, generally a lot, in a lot of cases handled like this, or swept under the rug, or we'll take care of it in-house.
Since the statute of limitations is only 10 years for this kind of case, even at the time, if the church had gone to the police at the beginning in the 1980s, it already would have been beyond the statute of limitations. Is that correct?
Well, no, there was abuse going on as of 1981 when it was reported.
Decades of abuse.
Yes. And now the case that we profiled happened within that 10-year period of his interview. So he could have been prosecuted for that. And the church could have notified the Boy Scouts, who said they weren't told until 1995 about this. So if that had happened, you'd like to think that this guy would not have any exposure to children.
You'd like to think that, but, you know, one of the reasons this case is so upsetting is that we don't know if there are similar cases like it.
Right, or if there's how many other victims may be in this case.
Right, because he said at least six, so there could have been more.
Right.
When did he stop being a troop leader?
1981.
So he admits that abuse was going on in the 1960s.
There's not a chronology, but by the age of the victims and when they say started in the very early 70s. So it may not have been.
He said 1969.
He took over the troop in 69.
I see.
So there may have started soon.
We don't know.
Certainly within a couple of years. And this is according to one of the victims who he confessed to abusing.
And he's in his 80s now?
He's 82.
And what does he say? Have we gotten any comment from him?
We contacted him. He initially said he might talk and then said he wouldn't talk, didn't, you know, direct us to a lawyer or anything. So, you know.
Have there been similar cases in Georgia that might make us predict how this civil case may go?
Well, that's sort of new. I mean, that's the thing. And as I understand it, there are a lot of civil cases being filed right now because of this window that's been opened. You know, it's a long time ago, so it's going to be a challenge. And, you know, it's hard to say. It's really hard to say. But,
you know, here's the thing, and I imagine there's a lot of parents who hear stories like this, and there's no, you know, there's very few nightmares worse, you know, other than the death of your child. This is as bad as it gets.
Right.
So here's the thing, Christian, and you're the public safety reporter, so tell me about our public safety here. What has changed since the 1980s and the 1990s that would assure me as a parent that this would not happen again? Are there changes in reporting procedures? Are there changes in the requirements of a church or any other organization that oversees my kids?
There have been several positive changes in that regard. There are now mandatory reporters that have been expanded to include, for instance, the pastor of the church. And it's under some question whether he was a mandatory reporter at that time. The lawsuit alleges that he was. There's also been changes.
What is a mandatory reporter?
Means if they know about this, they can be held liable if they don't report it.
To
the police, yes. And there's also, you know, the Boy Scouts have changed their rules, you know, requiring two adults to be, you know, present at any time around a child and not to be alone with a child.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the pastor of the church, who we interviewed, the current pastor, said if this happened today, we would have reported him before the day was out.
Okay, and have we had changes in our education of kids in terms of their reporting?
I think we have. I think kids have been, you know, there was none at that point.
Yeah.
Nothing. And even sex education was very limited. And this was in Gainesville. I went to some high school up there. I sort of know. There was no...
So you speak from experience.
Yeah, I think we had sex education in senior year. A little late.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you know, a lot of kids they're under authority figures. They didn't know what was happening. They knew it was bad, but they didn't know, you know,
I'm trying to connect the chain here. So we have had changes in how kids are educated on this.
Correct.
There are changes in reporting procedures of reporting it to the police. What about changes about when those reports come into the police? Are there changes in the way that police handle these reports?
I think police handle it more seriously than now. Especially, I mean, just because it's become a much more exposed issue, and I think that, you know, back then it was just felt like this would be too hard to prove, or kids, you know, we couldn't get witnesses. It was just sort of like a problem that we'd handle.
They also assumed kids lied about stuff.
They did. They assumed kids lied about it. And, you know, the, one of the victims, I think, who's really the saddest part of the story, who's now 59, still haunted by this, no one believed him when he told. His parents didn't believe him.
How old was he when he finally told?
I think he was about 14 or 15. And so the abuse continued. So,
oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
I mean, if you imagine how hard that must have been.
It's heart-wrenching. I mean, it's affected his life. I mean, he's been in and out of jail for drug, mostly drug offenses. And, you know, I think he's glad that, hopeful that people will now believe him.
How long will the civil court case take to work its way through the courts? Any prediction?
I have no idea.
But it could be a long time.
It could be.
Because there's a number of defendants, are there not?
Well, no, there's only, yes, defendants, yes, yes. The suit was brought only by the victim that we profiled Sunday, Rob Lawson. But, yeah, there are a number of defendants and national defendants like the Boy Scouts. So.
And any chance that there could be plaintiffs joining, other people that were abused?
There are none at the moment, but it wouldn't surprise me. I mean,
if people joined in.
I wouldn't be surprised if, I don't know this, I have no proof there are other victims, but.
But it would not surprise you. Christian Boone, public safety reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You can find this full story. It will be in Sunday's edition of the AJC.